call. Actually, 5:31. We'll call meeting to orders. Stephanie, please.
Susan Fowler, Tom Moore, Joe Omosagie, Elaine Palencia, Kyle Patterson, Julian Rappaport,
here.
Jane Sprandel,
here.
Margaret White,
here.
There's no quorum, but you can go ahead and talk.
Well, should we wait and see if Joe and Kyle come and then?
No, let's talk and then when they come.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
We're not, we haven't requested any action of you, so it's okay.
Okay. All right. So, public participation. You had the floor. I need a motion to approve the agenda. I guess it doesn't matter. All right. So we'll have to do it next time. All right. I'd been thinking about the staff and how hard you work, and so I just want to start off with that again because I think you have made, with all the information you provide us and the background and just working so diligently on everything, that to say how much we appreciate you, and it's such a positive experience because of all you do. So with that, I'm going to pass this to Lynn and have her guide us through our meeting tonight.
Hi, Patty. So I would like to do a very brief comment and then just go right into the study session content. Thank you for saying that. Today was an especially intense day in the office. It just sort of, it built. I wouldn't say it was all bad, but some of it was just a few minutes ago was kind of bad. So I appreciate you appreciating us. I mean, there's a lot more that we don't report to you and that doesn't make it into the documents that you're asked to approve. There's a lot around monitoring contracts and coordinating activities. So thank you. Oh.
So since we have a quorum, do I have a motion to approve the agenda? Okay, Elaine, second? Okay, all in favor? Aye. Thank you. Agenda's approved.
So we organized this memo sort of the way that we did the memo you used in the last study session, and I think you had a very productive conversation that wasn't totally tied to that. So, you know, this is really just here as background for you. We'd put the DD priority history first in case any DD board members were available to come. We don't have any here, but that's okay. And the draft of the priorities memo that they're looking at right now is also in this board packet. It's the final document in there. So you can see what they're thinking about for right now. We have been kind of working on the language more than anything. There's a desire to really focus more on outcomes, which is interesting because in some ways, it's easier in some ways in DD to create compelling outcomes. It's not easy to measure them, but you know, we're not talking about improvements in blood pressure or you know, difficult to assess changes in what kind of resources a person has that help them stay well. We can just ask, like, are you happy at your job? And sometimes get answers. So, you know, with that in mind, we're just trying to move the priorities memo closer to that. But we didn't change a whole lot of the content. We renamed the priorities. So employment services is work. We just thought, why not? And then I think we even said non-work instead of flexible supports for community activities, because some people can't do all of their activities in the community, and that's still a focus, and that's important. So you can see some changes there, but we're still waiting for input, and Interestingly, some of the input that you all gave, maybe it was last week, at the reactions to that first draft of priorities for you, ended up changing the DD board priorities. So it's not in there, but just to put together the secondary considerations and the overarching priorities into one category, we're doing that for both boards now. They liked that idea too. And anyway, so the history of the DD investments is really simple. The Mental Health Board has been around a lot longer than the DD Board and has an obligation per statute to fund some supports and services for people with DD. So after the DD Board was established in 2004, the two boards came to an agreement about how to work together and how much money the Mental Health Board would allocate for agency services and how decisions could be made regarding your sharing of administrative services. So those things have been amended a little bit over the years, but that original agreement about dollars stays. It's still there. So that's why I was able to give you an exact dollar amount for what next year's DD allocations could be. So anyway, yeah. In fact, how about I just stop talking? Unless you have.
Sorry, I was just like going up and not even thinking.
I don't know what we're actually paying.
So if you look at the bottom of page 3 just shows the SILA, which next year you pay nothing because you paid off the SILA, so for the next few years you pay nothing. And we will have a discussion about the SILA arrangements sometime in 2020 because the lease agreement is coming up. It's expiring in 2020, so we can talk about it. I don't know how many changes we'll need to make. There's an outside chance that you do a whole new RFP. We'll see what happens. That's just diligence related to the original agreements. The next item, and this is on page 4, is through RPC's Head Start, Early Head Start, you are funding a program called Social Emotional Development Services. That's been around a long time. It was funded by the DDB for many years. It was then funded by the Mental Health Board. Then it went back to the DDB. And then last year we brought it back to the Mental Health Board because it's not just to fit the amount of money that's available, although that's a factor. It's also because I thought that it might be well for the Mental Health Board to have all of the early childhood investments on their portfolio. So you have this and then the next one, which is DSC's children's program, are both paid for by the Mental Health Board.
Services. We're not paying for the whole program, right? We're paying for some part of it.
It would be ideal if we could have fit the whole program there, but because we couldn't pay for the whole thing there, the DD board is paying a little bit of it. You're paying the majority of it. I think that's right. But you're right, it's co-funded with the DD board.
So that's most of the cost of that program, which includes what?
Total cost of the program, the part that you're paying for is maybe $60,000. That I don't remember right offhand. But
so this is a person that we're paying for?
It is a staff person and then I think a little bit of time from other people in the program. They have that staff person consults with child care, with all the Head Start child care centers and she's also involved with the mental health program that you're now funding through Head Start. She consults with all those mental health specialists. She does therapy too, and her therapy is with children and with families. It's play therapy with children, it's playtime therapy, and then it's traditional therapy with families.
Okay, and then my last question is about DSC. What does that pay for?
Actually, Patty's here and might be able to give us more detail if you're interested in that.
This is a portion of DSC's budget, obviously.
Yeah.
The DSC's budget is large, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just never quite sure
This is the whole children's program, though. At least the children's program at DSC has other money that comes from early intervention, and they also, I think, now have a state grant too, which isn't that the ALMS grant. So there are, and there's an ISBE piece now too. This pays for a few different things within the children's program. Do you want to?
So if it's helpful with the early intervention, Patty at DSC, in the early intervention program, about, and I'd have to look at it for this fiscal year, but it averages about 18% of the funding comes from the state. Everybody gets funneled through, it's called the Child and Family Connections, to determine eligibility, if they're eligible, which is a criteria with several delays at greater than 30%. Then the state would fund that, and as they move in and out of that level of development, or if they are at risk, then it falls to the CCDDB funded programs. And then there are two other components to the program that are not funded by DDB, which or the state, that are separate grants, which is Parent Wonders, which is part of a Illinois State Board of Education grant, and Caregiver Connections, which is funds one staff position.
Does this program also still do child care consultations?
Yes.
So there are lots of...
The Child Care Connections does most of the child care consultation. They can go in upon request, but that other program is specifically for, and it covers like a 6-county area.
Okay. So there are developmental screenings. There's Play Project, which is an evidence-based treatment. So that's free to families because the mental health board is picking up the tab for that.
Developmental therapy, speech language pathology, screenings.
Right.
And play. You mentioned Play Project.
And so the value of picking it up when people go in and out of eligibility for EI is that they can keep the same therapy team. So that's a nice thing.
Or not have an interruption in service at all.
Right. Okay.
Kyle?
Just real quick. Are these programs done at DSC, at your guys'
no.
building?
None of them are. They're all home-based.
Okay.
It's all, they can go into daycares, home-based, a location where the family identifies. There are play groups, too, that we didn't mention. And then, like, the primary play group that happens during the week is in the Unitarian Church in Urbana.
Good.
And then there's one group that is in Tolono. But that, I think, is a Parent Wonders group. So we're looking right now at kind of the rural access and whether there's interest in some more of the play group opportunities outside the Champaign area.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle, I don't know if this is what you're getting at, but your question reminded me that at one point these programs were unique in that we were paying for the transportation time of staff, which allowed them to serve rural families.
Yes.
And it's my understanding that the state doesn't pay independent therapists for their travel time. So the, you know, the people who were getting the short end of the stick were the rural residents.
Mm-hmm.
So I think because that's a value of the DD board and the mental health board, that's another part that I probably should have mentioned. You're asking what the dollars actually go
that's
to.
That's a good point. I mean, it's very rural involved with home visits. They coordinate them so that they can target particular areas on a specific day to be as efficient as possible if it works for the families. But, you know, I think there's 27 or 29 different communities that they provide services to in Champaign County.
Thank you. I didn't know Parent Wonders had moved. When I first moved here, I was involved with the program with Janice Linton. And today you see there is so much information on children and mental health issues because they don't play anymore. And in Parent Wonders, they teach parents actually how to play. We're looking like, who needs to know? How to play with their children, how to read to their children, how to do various activities that increase skills, how to handle behavioral issues. And it's an amazing program. Mm-hmm.
Your microphone's
right now, but there it is. But it's, I've seen it go off and on and crackle a little, so sorry about that. Need to repeat anything? Or everything? Any other questions? Julian?
My last question of things that I'm supposed to know, but don't.
There's so much out there.
What does IAG stand for?
Okay.
That is Individual Advocacy Group, which is the nonprofit private company that does the SILAS services. They provide the residential services in those group homes that you own. So we have agreements. We have several agreements. They're on the lease agreements, and they're also on the service agreement, and they were selected through an RFP process. So when the lease agreements come up for renewal, we'll be talking to them about what should change. And
so could you write out their whole name in this somewhere?
I could, the first time
it appears?
Yeah, I'm not sure they even go by that anymore. I think they officially might be IAG.
I mean,
but
I don't know if anybody else reads it besides us, but
yeah.
I don't know what it means.
So I was wondering.
To be honest, it's easier for us to just answer the questions than to type up every possible acronym. And I think their agency name is IAG now, but it's okay. It's still an important question. Like, who are they? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was wondering.
Except it might be that their name is actually IAG and it's not an acronym. That's what I'm. It is crazy, but it's happening. DSC is doing that too.
Yeah, totally.
Or they're trying
DSC.
To.
All this seems like it should be something that we would know, but I don't. I think this is very difficult to follow, actually. The relationship of things and who's got what program and who's doing what and what we're paying for and what we're not paying for and what it's extremely difficult for me to get a handle on, even though I've been around for a few years now. Mm-hmm. I've been sort of waiting to ask this question, so maybe everybody else already understands it, but I don't.
So.
Yeah, that's the answer.
So there is residential, but do they have for the home children that are home-based, do they have is there a respite program in any way? Where, okay, for the children within this program, do they get a respite? Let's say they're living at home, having some kind of respite care for the parents to have their kids. Which
well, there still is, technically. So the DD board last week had two presentations on what is technically available to families in Champaign County. That is a state contract, because the state contracts for respite services still on a grant basis. They haven't changed that to fee-for-service. So it recently went, I think it was actually an RFP, right? So it had disappeared for a couple of years when a bunch of grants were zeroed out. Before that, DSC had done respite for this community for 30 years or more. So now that's no longer the case, but there are two agencies with responsibility to provide respite to people of all ages who have developmental disabilities in this county. And they each came and presented to the board, and we have some information from that. But these two programs do not provide respite services. And then with IAG, that's not, you weren't talking about the, okay.
About respite for, because it is needed.
One more thing about that. You said that here that IAG offers residential and day services. Do they actually provide day services, or do they use agencies in the community for that? And who's paying for that?
Well, the state. The state's paying for all of the services provided by IAG. We're only providing the home. And we ran into a snag this year that, you know, originally the RFP went out offering those homes at $1 a year rent. And that, then there was an addendum to the RFP which defined the rent rate differently. But it doesn't look like we can lower the rent very far below fair market value without creating other problems, but we're still looking at that because it is really a hardship to stay in the Scylla business, and not just in this county but all over Illinois because the rates are so low. So they provide, Scylla is a 24-hour service by definition, so they either provide the day services themselves or they subcontract it with another provider. And DSC offers day program services in this community, and I think they have, they might have been, for a while, the DDB was partially funding a project with CTF, and CTF has state funding to do day programming too. So they might have tried that. It was a couple years ago, there were a lot of options for people, but now I think most of the people living in our Scylla homes are using IAG for day programming too, and they do day program without walls, which means they're going out in the community. So it's a different model, and I think that also is financially very difficult to maintain.
Any more questions on the?
I think the point
you made really good
about all the detail is really important. You do. There is a lot of detail, and it's not all included here.
Yeah, well, we're just chatting. It's difficult for me to understand what our responsibilities are, given that there's a developmental disabilities board that's handling these things, which I'm not objecting to at all. I'm just trying to sort of comprehend. So what am I supposed to be aware of so that I'm being a responsible board member? That's not clear to me in this portion of it.
Whenever we do reports on services or financials regarding the DD programs, the DD board sees all. They see the programs that you're funding and the programs that they're funding. And then in your reports, you see the DD programs and the mental health programs that you're funding. So they're included. Both boards get to see these two programs right here and the results of these. And or next year, if it's a different set of programs, it would be.
Maybe asked otherwise, I would say. So should I assume that the DD board is looking at the quality and performance of these programs? And that's not something that we're supposed to be doing in the same detail in which they do it.
You actually pay the staff to do that. You both pay the staff to take on that responsibility. And so the DD board has more questions about what we find than you all do, but you have a right to ask all those questions too.
Oh, I wasn't wanting to ask more questions about what I'm supposed to be responsible.
But to know what those programs do and to ask, you know, if you think you don't like these programs, you don't have to support them, or you could ask us to look into issues on your behalf because you are the funder. The DD board recommends a certain set of programs to you each year to fund, and then you make a separate decision. So they decide, we like these programs, but we want the mental health board to fund them, and then you decide to fund them. And this is usually a conversation that I've worked on with the board presidents in advance of that. And this year it seemed so easy just to say, let's stick with the early childhood programs because so many mental health board members are involved with early childhood, you know, and so whether professionally or personally. So
I don't think I should go on, but I can ask questions about all kinds of things about this. Like, why are there all so few agencies that deal with? Why aren't there more providers for people with developmental disabilities?
I can answer that one real quick. So you know the problem that you have now with attracting workers to the mental health services? DD has had that problem for about 25, 30 years, and that's because the rates are so low. And Illinois has, I think, the second worst rates in the whole country. So, like, we don't pay very well for DD services here. And so in the same way that deinstitutionalized deinstitutionalization from the mental hospitals failed. Deinstitutionalization in Illinois has barely even happened for people with DDs. We're only doing it under class action lawsuits at this point. So, and that this SILA project that you have actually started because at the time Governor Quinn had made arrangements to get more money for people, more money per person, to get them out of institutions. It was the Rebalancing Act that went away, and Pritzker is talking about, or Pritzker's administration is considering it again. So that's great, but it's not happening anytime soon. So meanwhile, you know, it's hard to attract people to a field that doesn't pay, as you're starting to see with behavioral health.
As someone who worked in developmental services, I worked at DSC almost 30 years ago. Yes, the pay, and I was also a SILA worker also. It is difficult to maintain that level of care without the compensation, and that's the difficulty. And we're seeing that in mental health also. We can't seem to find enough workers at a mental health center. And I worked at a mental health center also. And so I've been through the agencies and seen that, unfortunately, there is no compensation for the difficult work that's been done.
We might also be bumping up against generational factors at this point. Don't really know, but we actually talked about this today. Like, it's possible that young people are choosing not to go into crisis work, which a whole lot of DD ends up being like crisis work.
Yep.
So, you know, for other reasons, including at 5 o'clock they want to be done working, and they don't want to get punched in the face while they're on the clock. Those are all things that happen to us, right?
And luckily today I had a student who said, I don't mind doing that. She's going into nursing, but she. Sorry. she said she enjoys. She works at a nursing home right now, and she's working on some of her prerequisites for going into the nursing program. She said that's something that she enjoys, because I talk to my students about lots of different things besides what class you're going to take next. And she said, no, I don't mind that kind of in your face work. And so there is some people out there. I don't meet them every day, but there's some.
So now we're losing
agents. I say ditto to all the comments on why. I mean, I'm thinking we have a SILA in Mahomet, right, that still isn't open? I was thinking I'm thinking Kyle's mom would be so sad.
Yeah.
Just.
Do they just not have staff, or why is it not open?
And your comment on the safety and just, it's really tough. Okay.
Then they've done that also.
Yeah. Do you want to go ahead and talk about the system of care and how looking at this and comments on?
Well, I think you all are experts on system of care.
Any comments on the agencies?
We ask this every once in a while, but it seems to be like a moving target. Are we still tracking overlap of services, like a person could get services from all four things at the Don Moyers Club, for example? I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Are we still tracking? We were it. No.
The DD board can track that. So all the DD contracts are actually tracked per person. But we have not done that with the mental health contracts. The agencies provide us information about how many people they've served, and then demographic detail, but we can't tell for sure if they're all different people. It's not likely that there it's a completely unduplicated account. But I think people can't probably take after-school services from more than one place, nor would they want to.
Yeah, I just wondered if we had that information or not, and you've answered that. And I don't know that it's a problem. At one time, I think we worried about it, maybe in the DD area.
That's why we've gone to this other system. It is that system is very difficult for everybody to use. It's just requiring too much detail, so we're thinking next year we might dial down the level of detail, but keep the personal we will. But keep the ability to see where people are in the system. To be honest, when I was tracking, for a long time I was just tracking personal information without it having to be entered as claims. And if I saw somebody getting services from five different programs, you know what I thought? That's a really great key informant to tell me how the system is working. You know what I mean? Like, it's not great if people are trying to get services everywhere, but they're learning something that I want to know. So, now this is different. I would suggest that with system of care, we've got like sort of two different locuses. Is it loci? Thank you. So for early childhood, there's a home visitors consortium just kind of naturally evolved. There used to be a really robust birth to six council that's serving lots of different purposes right now, so it's not as focused as the early the home visitors consortium is. So that's a really nice center for coordination and collaboration across providers who actually do the same kind of work to avoid duplication, because they know that if they're careful, they can reach all of the children who have a need in this county. And home visiting at early ages is super important, can really change a child's future. So they have really, at least expressed a sense of mission and the desire to serve everybody. So toward serving everybody, they're trying really hard not to duplicate services. The other locus, I can do the singular, yay, is still sort of the coalition, but we think that there are other, there are so many collaborations emerging from that, I would, there again, like, I don't think it's possible for a young person to take after-school services from everywhere. And during the summer, I hope they're getting as much as they can, because we're really increasingly putting supports and services into the schools and not in community-based mental health centers or community-based resources. So in the summer, what do children have? Like, in addition to the possibility of losing academic, what are they going to do with a crisis? And it's totally possible for a crisis in the summer. So I think it's really important, these summer programs that we just talked about last week, if kids are going to more than one of those, good for them, They can't be in the same place they can't be in two different places at the same time, so the issue of double billing that's not real anyway.
So I have a comment on that. Macy just celebrated their 25-year anniversary, and one of the things that they've noticed over time is that in their after-school program and their summer programming, that about 28% to 30% of the kids are needing help behaviorally, or have diagnosis or have behavioral issues, and also not all behavioral issues, but are needing more assistance, and so they're providing more aids for the programming. So they're including everyone, but they've had the need to increase staff to make sure that they can. So I'm sure that's across the board for all programs and something for us to think about. Any other comments? Okay, so on page 7, do all of these priorities areas remain relevant? Community needs and demands for services. And are the priority areas still appropriate to the Mental Health Board's mission? Any comments on that? Julian.
No, I'm just sort of, I'm engaging in a thought experiment with myself at the moment, saying, so like, what would happen?
Sounds dangerous.
What would happen, I wondered. If we didn't give the Developmental Disabilities Board this $666,000, what would happen?
Oh, I would think it would be horrible.
But what would happen?
Yeah. A lot of families would not get services. And I, too, my grandson used services, not of DSC because he's not in this county, but he had issues with hearing, so he used speech and language, and the parents used and behavioral, because how do you deal with a child who can't hear? So I see that as
I'm phrased
essential.
Otherwise, why doesn't the DSC, why doesn't the money that comes from that, is it a seven, it has its own legislation, right? It was passed as a separate appropriation from property taxes, right? So why doesn't that pay for those services? I guess maybe that's another way to ask my question. Why do they need money from the mental health appropriation
right.
in order to cover what there is a specific
There are a couple of reasons.
For.
So there's like she's making the case for because there's a community need. You also have a statutory obligation. The Community Mental Health Act requires mental health boards to invest in supports for people with mental health, substance abuse, and developmental disability needs. And so that's in the statute. And then you have an agreement between yourself and the DD board. Now that could be changed.
No, that's just something we decided.
Yeah, that's right. But your agreement with them equates to between 16 and 17% of your total allocated funds each year, which is much lower than the percentage invested in substance use or mental health. And the other 708 boards, which is the mental health board around the state, tend to have to put more money into DD.
Do they have DD boards?
Not very many do.
DD
board is a newer thing.
Sort of what I'm
Well, so you could say we want to rewrite that intergovernmental agreement and take all our DDB
I wasn't suggesting we stop doing it. I'm just trying to understand what would happen, given that we have this other source of funding for those sorts of things.
Well, I think that maybe the other way to, so Margaret gave sort of the human case, the other side of that is, there already isn't enough. There's not enough money to meet the need. We have some problems with the DD statute. It's much more specific in certain ways than the Mental Health Act is about who can be served and under what terms. So we have this really sort of narrow range of things that you can do with the DD dollars, DD board dollars. But there's still enough money to meet the need. We have to sort of think about how creative ways we can meet the needs. I mean, the state is not serving. I think there are 19,000 people across the state who are eligible for state-funded services and not receiving them. And in this county, there are 231 adults who are eligible and not receiving any services, whether from the state or us. So.
Right. I mean, and the state's also not funding mental health sufficiently.
Right.
Separate, as a separate issue, right? That's
yes.
just the nature of this
right.
world that we're in here. There's never enough money, but
right.
beyond that, the state's policies apparently are not
right.
sufficiently funding mental health either. Right? I don't think they are.
Elaine?
Well, aside from all of that, the fact that we're funding early childhood programs within the DD, just because something can be categorized as DD, the way I look at it, doesn't mean it can't be categorized as a mental health issue. And I, having lived through all kinds of support groups of families who found out they had a child with an intellectual or developmental disability, and the divorce rate, I don't know if it's still 90%, but it used to be. I know that the fact that we've chosen to fund these programs is particularly relevant to what we're doing. Now, I know we did fund IFS for a while instead of that. It was maybe less connected, but I think these, if we had to make a case for why are we funding these programs, it is really about the mental health of the families. Both of those.
Such an important comment, Elaine.
So, for your priorities for the next round, I mean, you could be very specific like that. You could say we want to stay in the early childhood realm because it fits in with some of the other things you're funding, and you're right that, you know, some it's like very early. There's not even a diagnosis. There's just a bunch of risk, and so it's kind of some. A lot of the same services for population. So we could make the priorities very specific for that if you want. I mean, anyway.
Should I say more or should I shut up?
So I think we talked about this one other time of, you know, why is the burden on the mental health board to fund these when, and an example, and I'm not saying we shouldn't fund this, but like truth, you know, is that truly a mental health board problem, or is that our cities and our county need to toss more money into preventing that? But I think we have to be part of the solution. But I often tell people, you know, obviously most of my service has been in school board and things like that, is if you don't like something your school is doing, probably call your legislator because they're probably the one who had this genius idea to make that rule. So maybe we need to, you know, encourage other politicians in the community of, hey, you know, I'm doing my due diligence to make sure we're serving these community members. Are you voting with your due diligence when you're issuing money to programs in the city?
Well, I hope will be my final comment about our relationship to DD. Maybe not about everything, but is that I think it's good for us to say the stuff we're saying now. That is, we ought to have, as it's a matter of policy that we've decided that this is a part of, it's better for the community's mental health for us to fund this kind of thing and to contribute to that difficulty. So we're making, I guess what I'm saying is we're making a conscious policy decision. We could make a different decision, I believe, but we're consciously choosing to do that, which it hasn't always been clear to me that that was a conscious decision. Actually, I don't recall it being discussed in any detail as a group here. So that's all. We often talk about the other things, but we never talk about that. It's just sort of assumed. So I think it's useful. I particularly like the thought that the mental health of the families is greatly affected by their ability to get services for their children who are identified by whatever label. And that seems like a darn legitimate thing for a mental health concerned board to do. So thank you for offering that thought.
Thanks, Elaine. I think to put the terms of at risk and the prevention piece also, how important that is, and the mental health of families. And the guidance that's given or the help, assistance in the group. So I want to go back to a comment Jane said, because I had the same thought on it, and I want further comments, or if there are any, is when we do look at truce, it is a public health perspective. And so my thought is similar to Jane, and is why aren't we, I'm not sure, we did kind of look at the data at that, and I don't have it here with me. But to think about some of the things we're funding, should they be funded by other groups? Comments?
Do we have an update on, correct me if I'm wrong, but the 50,000-75,000 is referenced to the matching funds? Were they able to acquire matching funds?
The city has made a commitment. The city of Champaign has made a commitment. So we'll use some of that. I mean, we've got a...
Yeah, we have a meeting tomorrow. I believe they have a commitment from the city of Champaign for about $20,000. And it hasn't been brought up, but I think the city of Urbana also made a commitment to truce, less significant. But I would imagine that that'll be part of the conversation tomorrow. Between the two, it's probably close to the $25,000. We have questions as staff in terms of what the relationship is between the agency and what we're funding, and what the commitments the agency has made to these other funders in terms of services, and whether they align and meet the obligations that the question is, what is its relationship to the truce program specifically in terms of the funds that have been committed by the two cities, and that we want to see evidence of that relationship as part of the meeting the match requirement. I believe from what limited information, at least I have at this point, that it's likely to meet that commitment. But we have to have that conversation. And then we'll also be asking for supportive documentation. But we do expect to likely be having an amendment reflecting the increase based on the match provision, or at least a portion of the match provision being met. So, timely question, considering.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thanks. And we're glad you're on that, too. That's so important. Thank you. Any other comments? So, Julian's afraid.
Well, while we're on that topic, I'll raise my perpetual question, is why we don't get some sponsorship or contribution from the public health district. Many of the things that we do are totally relevant to public health. And I don't understand why, as a matter of policy, there's not some formal relationship for mutual program support. I understand what the practical problem of it is, which I could speak on, but I don't understand why we don't do something about it.
Not the agency.
Well, what I mean is the agency has a board. The board is composed of the chair of the county board and the two township supervisors, Urbana and Champaign. That's it, three people.
I know those people.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And as far as I know, they haven't actively, over the time I've been involved with this, including when I was on the county's public health board, which is a small subset of it. That board does not seem interested in forming policy with respect to the public health district. I don't understand why, and I've never got a good answer of why. Nobody really wants to talk about it. And I don't understand why, if they were interested, they wouldn't think that collaboration with the Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disabilities Board from a public health agency might not be a great idea. But I have yet to find any political support for that conversation to take place. So unless I want to enter I guess what it says is you have to go to the county board and ask the question, and then, but, you know, I'll stop there. It seems to me if we're talking about this kind of cooperation, that should be raised.
When you were the president of the Board of Health, I'm going to tell a little bit of that story.
Sure, you go right ahead.
Because there are about 400 copies of the consultant report that was commissioned by the Board of Health on the issue of the relationship between the Board of Health and the county public health board or district. Is that which one's district and which is department? I would get it all mixed up. So the governmental entities, why there's not a formal relationship between the governmental entities. So that consultant report was paid for by the Board of Health, and it did provide some reasons why that isn't happening, but it also created a huge political rift. Isn't it true? And at the time, we had a formal memorandum of understanding to provide staff support to the County Board of Health around that same time, but nothing was asked of us.
Well, I can be more specific about that.
Right.
There was a joint agreement to support the Beyond Blue program in outside of the boundaries of Champaign and Urbana into the rural areas, which presumably people representing interests in the county outside of Champaign-Urbana are always asking, like, how come you only serve Champaign-Urbana? Well, we started that program and initially got support for it, and it was then withdrawn by the public health district after a very brief period of time for no discernible reason that I could follow that had anything to do with providing decent human services. So if the people who represent the rural areas are concerned about the rural areas, you might raise that question with the public health district. That would be a great example of the kind of thing that I'm talking about. We support Beyond Blue, but they were well, you get the idea. That's a very concrete example of it.
Just ask last year.
You don't think I'm not critiquing you. No. I don't mean you specifically.
But just to be
generally
true
speaking,
to that history, we keep asking.
It would be useful for people to know this, don't you think?
So one of the things, would it be useful too to tell some of our agencies about the need to talk to the public health department, make it known that this should be a joint venture, and have them ask, because if they're asking and there's no response, that's a pretty strong message.
Beyond Blue, to use that as the example, they do ask, and it's in response to the issue that's either brought up by the board and the public health district, and you will find it actually in your documents from last May, responses submitted to questions raised by the board, and you will see it from the prior year, and basically the public health district will say that is the responsibility of the mental health board, and that's that. And in considering, I guess, that we had that relationship with the Beyond Blue program, it's that the Board of Health really doesn't appear to have much discretion in how their funds are allocated. And so it's driven by the relationship with the public health district. So what little money they do have available for discretion goes to other services, but not to Beyond Blue because of the feeling, the expressed feeling that or opinion that the Beyond Blue program is more appropriately the purview of the Mental Health Board than it is public health.
So if I may add to that, thank you for that. That's quite accurate. So this might come full circle on where I was starting when I said they have this three-person board made up of elected officials who have no particular, they may have individual interest in mental health or public health, but there's no reason, no qualification that makes up that board, other than that they are the supervisors from Cunningham and Champaign Township and the chair of the county board. And they have been passive, that board, not those current individuals, just forever. That board has been extremely passive in setting policy for the public health district, which does have most of the money. The county public health is very small, and it's really just a subset. It's never been adequately funded. You can go back in the history and figure out why that is, but short of doing that, the issue really is that, I mean, if one were to address this issue and think that it would be appropriate, the people that could address it would be that board. That board could instruct the the public health district to pay attention to this problem, but they have not. Why they have not, I don't know.
And I do think in the case of truce, that would be appropriate because that is a public health perspective. I understand with Beyond Blue why they've said it's mental health, but I think if you look at truth, it's a public health perspective, and so to include them. But
well,
it sounds like
there's a lot, depending on how you define public health, is very many of the things that we fund could just as easily be thought of as public health, and in many places they are. So
it was really recent. It was just only ended a couple months ago. CU PhD, the agency, had received some other funding that they invested, not in TRUCE, but in a different program that's adjacent to TRUCE through CUAP. And it was also, I can't remember what they were doing exactly. It was like two things. Like one was development of resources for youth, and the other was this sort of crisis response, developing a model for crisis response when the crisis is community violence. No, we were funding that. It might have been like within, it might have been more closely related to Neighborhood Champions. You're probably right. And then, and that was funded through the CUPHD. They got the grant for it and purchased the services through CUP. So sometimes we get close.
I also cannot, I know that they did something, but I can't remember exactly what it was. But I know I heard Julie Pride on radio talking about gun violence as a public health issue, but I don't remember at all what the other details were. so they've acknowledged it, you know, the executive director has. So
sure. I mean, I'm not saying they don't do anything. What I'm saying is there's no policy that's been pursued because their board does not set policies that are discernible. They do what they want to do. And their board says, okay.
We should probably just go talk in the parking lot after the meeting.
Sorry.
So in the same way that in smaller communities than this one, where there are one or zero providers of services, the provider of services calls the shots. And I would suggest that's what's happening here. We don't have two public health districts. We're not a big enough community to have two public health agencies, so it would be ridiculous. So I think they get to decide the terms.
That's a whole other question.
But that's
we have
happening.
Two statutes and that establish two such districts, and the public health in the rural area. areas of the county was completely by when it was established, because the then majority of the county board didn't want it.
Right.
They set the standards for or the rate that they could charge in such a fashion that they essentially had no money, or no money to speak of, really. So those people who complain about services in the rural community should pay attention to what the representatives of the rural community are supporting on the county board and what they're not. And maybe they don't want public health services. Maybe they don't want mental health services. But if you want to look for who to blame, it wouldn't be here. It would be there. They're your elected representatives in the rural areas. And maybe that's the policies that people they represent want. But I don't think the blame should be diverted from them. That's my speech. And I bet there are people here who have connections to those representatives and could represent that point of view if you thought it was convincing. I'd be happy to talk to anybody that was willing to actually think about it. So far, nobody was willing to think about it.
I think their list is pretty long, is why. So let's go ahead with, do we expect changes in the operating environment which would justify expansion or reduction of currently funded programs?
We decided, Mark and I decided, not at the last minute, just to leave the entire draft implementation plan for NB versus Norwood in a file drawer and not present it to you tonight because it's not even an approved draft. So NB, basically, that class action suit forces Illinois to develop a children's behavioral health system because it doesn't actually have one. So that's a short. So we are at the point through that class action suit where not only do we not have a children's behavioral health system supported by the state, and this is a state-run state, not a county-run state, we also don't have an approved implementation plan. So it'll be a while before any positive changes will be discernible through NB, and so we put it away. Maybe we'll talk about it next year, and it'll be great. And then LIGAS, we also decided not to share with you. You're probably really familiar with LIGAS. I think it doesn't perform as promised, but the lawyers who initiated that class action suit are quite satisfied with the results. I don't know. I think they just want to go home. So, yeah. So that's around DD services. Anyway, so LIGAS is probably not going to be compelled to do more than it already has. So this time next year, we'll probably still have 19,000 people in the state of Illinois waiting for some kind of DD services. And maybe we can make some progress on the 231 waiting here. So I think those two things are probably not going to shift very much. Those would shift towards there's less that you have to provide, you know, more of it's being taken care of by the state. The things that could be really difficult are if managed care really does take on, like they, right now DCFS does, kids don't have to be in managed care, and that's a really recent change, right? And DD is not yet in managed care. If either of those things happen, I think the kind of things that you could do with this money that would be helpful to a system become more abstract, like helping the smaller providers afford the kind of infrastructure that they don't have right now, which makes them able to bill managed care organizations for their services. That's like a little bit more boring than what we've got going on right now. And I think it's also managed care has been a disaster for people with DD, and I don't know how it could be that much better for those DCFS children because they also have very high complex needs. So those two things, you know, maybe will happen. There are some federal innovation grants that come along. You know, you never know from one day to the next what's going to happen to Medicaid. So like, I think that some of these things will change, but I don't know if they'll change fast enough to change the way that we will look at applications for funding, or even to change the kind of applications that you will receive in just 2 months. So while I think there are some opportunities around the corner, I just don't know how far the corner is down the block.
On page 9, so we have our contract awards by priority. Are there any comments on that?
Believe it or not, I do have a question, which is, am I correct in thinking, looking at the shifting of funding from justice and mental health to innovative practices, one going down, the other going up. Is that because we've reclassified some programs? That's what that represents. That's what I thought it was.
Yes, there are some changes reflected there, and some of that, like 2018, that's a staff-driven classification. 19 and 20, we relied on the agency selected criteria. We added that to the application. Where they specifically selected the priority under which they were applying. You do see some changes, for example, parenting with love and limits. That has an effect on the justice and mental health category. You have some changes in terms of victim services, shifting, say, to a system of care, that type of thing. So that's why you see some change. In terms of, I guess, if you were to look at it, I and it's only 2 years then, but I'd look at 19 and 20 as far as where the growth has been. And you have, just like with innovative practices, a lot of programs that would have been previously under renewal, other in renewal in 2019, likely ended up in the innovative practices access to care. And a good example of that is the investment at Promise Healthcare, which is pretty significant between the two programs there.
Thank you. That's what I thought. I just was trying to understand it.
Thank you, Mark. Any board announcements? All right. Let's adjourn the meeting. Thanks.